The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Welcome to the latest business of the business podcast. I am your co-host, JP Jump Haas from the Two Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me, the financial wrestling genius himself, the doctor, Lavi Margolin. How you doing, Lavi?
Hey, John. I'm doing well, recovering from my jiu-jitsu intro class. I feel like a champ already. But tonight, we're starting out hot, kind of keeping the theme going as we had Brett Lauderdale for his 10th appearance last week. But somebody that has really been in that sphere of ours for a number of years. It took me a while to realize his name because the Orange Crush brand is so well known, but a pleasure. And finally, able to welcome Adam Abdallah to the show. Adam, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Lavi. Big fan of the show. John, you as well. I'm excited to jump on. I've got a lot going on at once in the wrestling sphere, so I'm excited just to get into it with you and see what you guys are interested in knowing.
Nice. All right, I'm gonna start off, like, where did you grow up? Like, where were you, like, how did you become a wrestling fan? Just to get off, because we like to ask our guests that, just because it seems like usually where they kind of grow up, they almost become like Northeast guys, WWF guys. So where did you grow up, and like how did you become a fan?
Yeah, I grew up in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, and I have been a wrestling fan since I was 4 years old. There used to be a VHS rental store on like Fifth Avenue and like 52nd Street in Brooklyn on Sunset Park. And when I was a little kid, you know, my mom would take me there to rent movies, and I was immediately drawn to like the wrestling wall. The first wrestling tape that I ever purchased and I watched over and over again was SummerSlam 88. Which emanated from the garden. From there, I just basically was a lifelong fan. You know, my uncle owned a grocery store in the factory district down in Sunset Park. And some of the guys who worked at the factories had like black boxes, so they would tape the pay-per-views for me and bring me the tapes the next day, especially like WCW ones, like in like the early 90s. And as I became more independent, like when I was like 11 or 12, and I was kind of an early adopter to the wrestling message boards, the internet, RSPW, Sports Guy, Bill Simmons, AOL message boards and the like. I started tape trading, you know. There used to be this website, Dave's Wrestling Emporium, that would have like these like 10 times dubbed over versions of like King of the Death matches and the Best of Onita and other compilations, things of that nature. And I've kind of been just like involved in the wrestling scene since then. I started going locally to independents around that time. A favorite of mine was Jersey All Pro Wrestling, because I lived in Sunset Park. Bayonne is like really close, because it's like 15, 20 minutes away over the bridge through Staten Island. I grew up seeing people like Homicide, Loki, the Hit Squad, the Haas Brothers, highlight Billy Rail, Elax, Dixie, you know, a lot of people you might recognize from early Ring of Honor. And I would go to those shows, which are also my first exposure to death matches as well, because they were doing death matches at Jersey All Pro and Bayonne back then in 2099. Which was very early for kind of US indies. And I just, you know, really, you know, became part of the scene. I became friends with a lot of people who would go on the bus trips to ECW at a young age. So I went to the arena a bunch of times, the Elks Lodge. I actually, my first job so to speak, in wrestling was that I was a part of the ECW street team in their dying days in like 2000, where I would go stand in front of the world in Times Square and hand out flyers for the upcoming pay-per-views at Hammerstein that they were doing. And, you know, just kind of like snowballed from there. But for a long time, I was just like a very dedicated fan and someone who was really invested in the local scene, you know, living in Sunset Park. Like, that's where Loki's from. You know, I remember watching a match once. It was an outlaw show, not the promotion outlaw, like an illegal show in a church with no windows. On 4th Avenue in Sunset Park, and it was Homicide and I believe Jay Lover against Frankie Stars and Low Life Louie, and it was like in front of 50 people, and like Homicide set Louie on fire, he jumped out of the balcony. It was just like crazy stuff that, you know, I only known about like peripherally through like tape trading in Japan, and then I started seeing it in person. So that's what got me into that's my kind of like origin story as a fan, I would say.
So basically, you got involved kind of behind the scenes almost through ECW, basically, through the dying days of ECW.
Yeah, I used to go on. This used to be this kid, Uriel, who both he headed up the ECW street team and did odd jobs for ECW. Later, he became, well, he was also the person who ran the ECW bus trips too, from Queens to Philly. As well, and that's how I met him. Years later, that tradition kind of was picked up by Mike Johnson, who did the Ring of Honor bus trips. So I was very invested and very present at Ring of Honor from early 2002 to, you know, to now, I guess. You know, I mean, I work very closely with one of their champions. And I've, I've always just, you know, had this, like fear of FOMO. Like, I can't miss Kobashi and Samoa Joe at the New Yorker. I can't miss, you know,
I understand. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And, you know, Chris Daniels and like New Jersey, you know, like, I mean, I've had the bug forever and, you know, and I've always been somebody who's kind of like, given what I do professionally, people have thought it was weird for a long time, but now the tide is starting to turn in a different direction.
Now, you know, you mentioned working with the ROH champion. What's going on with Super Power Slam? What is going on with this show coming up?
Okay, so Super Power Slam is a co-production between JCW, GCW, and the Little Oak Center for Neurodiversity, which is actually founded by my wife, Susan Globus. And the idea behind Little Oaks is that it is going to be essentially a resource center, both digitally and then hopefully one day, you know, pie in the sky physically, where families who have trouble navigating just the system. I have two kids who are on the ASD spectrum, and they make it really impossible for you to figure out like what to do, what resources there are, how to get things paid for, how to go through and getting an IEP through the system. So we're basically creating a resource center using our knowledge, but also like top experts in the field to help families feel not so alone, essentially, and going through this process. And also creating mentorship programs between neurodiverse adults and kids, and also things such as like more practical things like how to sue the city to get your money back for the services that you pay for, you know, for your kids when they have like autism or ADHD, because you're entitled to that. And, you know, I think there's a big crossover between, honestly, anybody who is super talented and locked in at what they do and neurodiversity in general.
Right.
That's why we call it Super Power Slam, because we don't, you know, there's a lot of stigma these days with the way people are talking about there needs to be a cure for autism, when in reality, I think a lot of people are starting to realize and adopt the theory that autism, like in some, a lot of people consider it to be the next step of evolution in humans, you know, in terms of having these like really locked in, you know, extraordinary abilities. So yeah. That's the purpose of the show. It's also the first show technically that Orange Crush is producing and presenting. I'm the New York promoter for GCW. And you know, we run shows on our license. But this is a show that I'm, you know, Brett is certainly helping, and GCW will have a significant presence on the show, but, this is kind of more of a, kind of a super show in the style of like a World Wrestling Peace Festival or, you know, like a WrestleCon super show, but, it will still be in canon with storylines that are ongoing in places like JCW and GCW. So it's not just like dream matches one off. On that show, there will be, you know, like some great wrestling matches. We've already announced three. Willow Nightingale is going to take on Mara Sade, which is a very interesting inter-promotional match that we put together. Willow is somebody who is amazing, positive force in pro wrestling, extremely generous. And Mara is somebody who I've worked with closely since her release from WWE or from NXT originally, to give her some of her first matches on the indies against really quality opponents, and as well as developing personality pieces on her and things like that through JCW. So excited about that. Jonathan Gresham is going to have his first match back from his kind of very unfortunate, scary, but luckily safe now stroke that he had a few months ago. He's been in training. He's cleared. He feels confident. He's going to be ring ready February 1st. So he'll be taking on Lee Moriarty, who's an artist and wrestler that I work with very closely, both in booking him on the shows that I put together, but also in terms of helping shepherd his art career. I've done an exhibition of his work in Miami in 2024. One of his paintings is actually is like one of the advertising images for Get in the Game, which is like the most important museum show about art and sports that has happened in the United States, that traveled from Crystal Bridges to SF MoMA, which is the largest museum in the country, now to the Perez Museum in March. The Perez Museum purchased one of his works as part of the exhibition that I put on, and now that work will be in the museum show. So Lee and I have like a collaborative relationship in that respect. Lee will also be making the first ever limited edition fine art print that he's ever made that fans can purchase, which will be part of the fundraising aspect of the show, which I haven't announced yet, but I just made official. You know, they have a storied history. They've wrestled each other in many different places, from PWG to GCW, Prestige. You know, they're just two kind of uniquely talented wrestlers and masters of their craft and artists. So excited to do that. And of course, Lee is also the ROH Pure Champion, which is a title that Jonathan Gresham, I think during a kind of otherwise difficult period in Ring of Honor's history, really like helped carry the show on his back through his work and his matches. And later as world champion, he did the same. So, you know, especially coming off the Nigel Lee match at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view last week, which had that kind of that passing of the torch around the first generation of Pure Champion to Lee. I think it's a nice kind of compliment to that as well. And then also, I mean, kind of big match that we got signed is that Paul Walter Hauser, Emmy winner, Golden Globe winner, Oscar nominee, and Progress Proteus champion, will be wrestling Mad Dog Connolly. I mean, Paul has been real serious about his approach to pro wrestling. If you saw his match with QT Marshall at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view at the 2300 arena, like he went all in, you know, blood and guts, all that. And he wants to continue to challenge himself. And he posted on a JCW post one day. It's like, this is really cool. Da 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 da. I love JCW. I was like, why don't you come wrestle for us? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, what about Mad Dog Connolly, who has a reputation of being like one of the stiffest, like hardest people to wrestle in the indies, and really just kind of a scary dude. So I thought the the thought of kind of like an actor trying to test his mettle in the pro wrestling world, going head to head with somebody who is a character that even other wrestlers who I book him against are like, oh, you know, like this is gonna fucking hurt kind of deal, is a good draw. And more on that match will come out soon. And then there's a number of other talent from GCW, AEW, ROH, New Japan, and other places that are either already announced or yet to be announced. So we're really excited. And that'll be at the Melrose Ballroom on February 1st at 7 p.m. It's a nice counter. I think it's a nice counter program to the Royal Rumble as well, which is in Saudi Arabia the day before, you know, and we're doing a charity show here in the States with some of the best talent in the world.
Awesome stuff. I'm going to hand it over to Lavi, who is going to bring up, I don't know if he knows this, my favorite venue possibly of all time, the Rexplex.
Yes. So I just added those notes, Adam. I'm realizing we were probably, not surprisingly, intersected. I picked up the bus tours when Mike Johnson would do them. I think the first one I ever went to was the Retribution Thunder Liger, right? It was like a two-shot weekend. So I went to the
Weekend of Thunder.
Weekend of Thunder. Thank you. So the Rexplex show. And I was just returning to wrestling. I had, you know, gotten tired of the Attitude Era, Katie Vick, and I would still get the newsletters. But who gets on the bus before we go to the show? CM Punk. And I had no idea who he was. There was a kid who, I think his Mittens, who had like the CM Punk wraps, and he was like super excited. I'm like, okay. And then I saw him at the show and I was like, okay, I get it now, you know. So that was an amazing time for sure. So one of the things I've always been curious about is, you know, Jersey Championship Wrestling working so closely and from what I understand, like sort of being part, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you're 50% owner and Brett Lauderdale's 50% owner. How did this come about? Were you like, one time I want to invest in Game Changer Wrestling and Brett was like, let's do this instead? How did that all work?
I'll tell you the real story, actually, which is quite interesting. So, you know, I originally started my relationship more formally with Game Changer Wrestling when I started my magazine, Orange Crush, in 2019. It came out in 2020, which was basically like a coffee-style table art zine that looked at wrestlers from kind of like a lifestyle perspective, also contemporary artists who were interested in professional wrestling. And I thought a lot of the more interesting independent artists in wrestling were working through GCW at that point. I kind of rediscovered my love for independent wrestling and deathmatch wrestling after a lull and after Ring of Honor's kind of peak. When I went to TOS 3 at the Starland Ballroom in New Jersey. And I kind of just like, I got the bug. This is 2018. And so I became kind of good friends with Brett over time, traveling to a lot of the shows, you know, like I have a successful like PR business. So I would do little things like sponsor dinners for the rest boys, like after the show, like nothing too crazy. And then at some point there was this like year long conversation where we spoke to DJ Hyde about trying to purchase and revive Combat Zone Wrestling, because, you know, that's where Brett came from. And whatever people think it's worth, sentimentally, it meant a lot to Brett and a lot of people who came up in the business and in the indies. And I worked with Brett to try to negotiate a deal with DJ for quite a long time. Had many very frustrating long phone calls with DJ Hyde over the period of a year. And then as we kind of unraveled different aspects of CCW, we realized that like he'd licensed like all the different IP and video to every single other possible person who could have rights to it. So there was no exclusive rights. And then also for television, Steve Carroll, who's the former GM of ECW, basically like really trapped DJ in this very restrictive contract where he had approval over any sale, any assets, any IP. And when CCW would release those pay-per-views on like In Demand, where they would market them basically as pornography, but it was really just like women's wrestling. That was Steve Carroll's like basically intermediary company, Stonecutter, licensing CCW and putting it out there. So as a business person, I finally realized like there's like nothing here to buy, you know, except like maybe the right to use the name or something. So, you know, Brett and I got to talking, and then we called up Ricky O, who owned JCW, which was the predecessor to GCW, which Danny and Brett took over, I believe in about 2015 when they changed the name over. And we basically bought the rights, like the, you know, essentially the rights to the Jersey Championship Wrestling brand to bring it back as a parent company, a sister company to GCW at a time when the indies were really hot. And there were so many people that we wanted to book on GCW. There was enough time. There was a lot of young talent that we wanted to develop. And we started doing kind of some shows that would accompany GCW's Weekends at the Showboat in Atlantic City back in the days of the Carousel Room. And we also would do standalone shows too. Brett has been always a great supporter of like my artistic endeavors. You know, we did a whole book, an exhibition about GCW show and at Kirk and Hall as the first US independent company to run there. And we just, you know, have kind of like, we're both, we have a lot of differing perspectives on things, you know, both in terms of wrestling and business, but at the end of the day, he's a no bullshit guy, I'm a no bullshit guy, and we can talk quite freely, and we both also have like, you know, I wouldn't say like ADHD, but we're like, we jump around from so many different things. It also gives us the ability to do things really quickly, like picking up on trends or noticing like who's available or what's an exciting thing that might happen. When does this air, by the way? Because I have a big match that we're announcing, but probably not till tomorrow night.
If John is staying up late, likely it's going to stream on Two Man Power Trip tonight.
Oh, tonight.
Okay. How's it looking for that, John?
Well, I think you're muted, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tonight or tomorrow morning.
Okay. Yeah, I might withhold then. But yeah, so that's how Brett and I got together in the JCW venture. And yes, we own 50% of the IP essentially each. And you know, there's like obviously a lot of shared efficiencies with GCW in terms of travel schedule and things like that. But a lot of that changed in May of 2025 when I decided that, and Brett decided too, like having just kind of like GCW light, you know, developmental didn't really have the same value that it did maybe in 2021, you know, post COVID, when there was this like huge demand for like live wrestling. And there's an overabundance of wrestling media that people can consume at home. So instead of making it like a developmental promotion, I wanted to make it more like a territory promotion where we could book wrestlers of different styles and types, and from around the country and the world that aren't necessarily on like the GCW, like 6-7 shows a month loop, you know, that Brett books. So he's given me a lot of creative latitude with this, you know, in a way I would say like JCW 3.0, which started with our Mayflower show through now, where we've kind of like really upscaled the print.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 1-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Like the production, the amount of content that we create, storylines that are kind of more fluid, and you know, also a lot of experimentation with guys who are used differently elsewhere, teams that don't exist in other places that we've kind of created. So it's been really fun and rewarding. And we're seeing, everybody, you see everybody on Twitter today being like, support indie wrestling. Cause any live events in general right now, the state of the American economy, it's a very, more precarious, way of doing business, because most, like back in the day, like you would sell a lot of tickets like on the day of on sale, and then, you know, it's like kind of solidly throughout, and then a big last final jump at the end. Now we'll see like our gate, like especially for smaller shows like the JCW ones, which are usually in the like kind of 100 to like 250 range, I'll see like 3/4 of our tickets sell like the last week of the show, you know. So we never know what we're going to do until we get until like we're really almost there, essentially. And I think that's indicative of a lot of indie wrestling these days, and you kind of have to have the stomach for it. And I feel lucky to be able to work with so many great talent. I feel grateful to Brett and also people like Chris Daniels at AEW and other folks who work for national companies who allow their talent to come on our shows and do different things, do longer matches, try different gimmicks, things of that nature.
No, amazing. And some of the points that you made in terms of the historical context are actually like questions and pieces that I've been putting together in my mind for a while, because of course when you look up CZW on like Justia or whatever trademark, it's like Stonecutter Media, and I'm like, just are people like just not acknowledging that it's not owned by DJ Hyde? But it makes a lot of sense now that you explained it, that it's just licensed out.
It's a question of contract law, right? Like if DJ Hyde wanted to, he could say that I'm the rightful owner of the CZW trademark, because common law, like, you know, it's like he is, like he bought it and he's ran the shows, but he, you know, he sold that away. So that's kind of the catch with that.
Yeah. So, and you were touching upon like the state of independent wrestling. And of course we've been talking about it a little while, but we got the conversation going with Brett last week. So we'd love to hear everyone's perspective. So like, I'm not sure I understand what's the heart of the issue that hit independent wrestling this year? Why was it, you know, I think there was pent up demand post coronavirus. Like, what are we experiencing now? Like, what are you seeing?
I think part of it is the economy, you know, like, listen, a lot of people can barely afford to buy groceries, you know, like, so wrestling is a big expenditure. And then people who are like really big wrestling fans are like, I need to go to WWE and you know, I want to go to WrestleMania. And TKO is like taking advantage of that in a big way and charging people like enormous amounts of money to go to those shows. So there's less, I think, it's funny. It's like, I go to UFC at the Garden and I'm like, who are all these like super rich, but also dumb people? And like 20,000 of them, like what, one place, you know, like, not, I'm being like a little facetious here, but it's true. It's like, I think there's less money to go around. There's not a day of the week that wrestling isn't on TV. So you're always competing with television content. And for some products, like TV, it's like more enjoyable to watch it on TV than to go. You know, so one of the reasons I think that GCW has been so successful is that it's the only, it's one of the only wrestling promotions that feels like a scene almost, in the same way as, like, you know, like the punk scene or like the hardcore scene. Like, it's like people go there to see their friends. People go there to have like kind of a visceral experience. It feels like a rock concert, you know, not like, like theater, no matter what level of theater you consider wrestling to be. So I think that's a big thing. And also it's just like, it takes time and patience to build audience, you know, like if you're not already a wrestling fan, becoming a wrestling fan later in life is very difficult, because I think the suspension of disbelief and like the visual nature of wrestling is very alien to people who did not grow up loving wrestling, you know. It's just like, what's going on? In the same way that somebody might like watch a football game for the first time, be like, what are the rules? But in wrestling, it's like the rules are just like so abstract, and what you're watching, and like explaining what wrestling is, even so like meta in a way, that, you know, it takes a lot to convert somebody. But if you get them in the room, 9 times out of 10, in my experience, especially indie wrestling, I find that people who have a more intimate experience with wrestling enjoy it more than like going to like a WWE, well, back in the day, house show, but not anymore. Or even like AEW, which has incredible wrestling, but you know, I try and take a date to a AEW like pay-per-view, you know, like they're like 6 hours long. It's not like something that most people are willing to do in terms of ingratiating new fans. I just think that there are a lot of inherent challenges with the way that wrestling is consumed right now, in terms of oversaturation, in terms of, you know, there only being so much capital available from the fan base. So, you know, with JCW, we try to make it really affordable, you know, for people to come see. We make it also free, and watch online. I mean, I book the shows as much for the live audience as we do for the online audience, because on some of our shows, like I've done this like kind of self-congratulatory birthday show with Joey Janela for the last like 3 or 4 years, and before that Nick Wayne as well, because our birthdays were like a day apart, and that had like 30,000 views on YouTube. Typical JCW show gets between 10 and 20,000 views, which for independent wrestling is very high, especially for full shows as opposed to like, you know, clips. So I'm just trying to create like a platform that is accessible to more fans, and also showcases more styles and types of wrestling, and you know, kind of a little bit of a different vibe than GCW. I mean, we're really for the, you know, Tony Khan always says, for the sickos. Like, I book for my, like, shit that I would want to see myself, perfect, to be perfectly honest, you know, rather than to draw money. Obviously, we want to draw money. And by putting on some of the best matches on the independents, like, inherently, there will be a fan base for that. And by booking them over and over again, some of this talent, you know, that will create an affinity, personal relationship, you know, between fans and talent. But ultimately, you know, I do it for the art of it.
No, amazing. So I feel like there's so much to discuss. We haven't scratched the surface of the art world and so on. But I think my last question before turning it over to John may sort of speak on things. If you've had the chance to follow it, Sukiban, I'm probably butchering that. But
I do the PR for Sukiban.
Okay, you do the PR. Okay, so I've probably responded to your messages. So as much, you know, integrated into what they're doing, it seems like it touches on the art world and pro wrestling in a unique way. Like, where do you see that crossover? And I guess we can't be fully evaluative for how they're doing, but sort of like, what's your perspective on how they're positioning themselves in the market?
Well, I'll say this. So we'll probably get to this, but you know, I'm curating the first museum show on art and professional wrestling in 2027 in St. Petersburg, Florida, at the MFA. And one of the things that I've really had to determine when thinking about like what counts in terms of pro wrestling. Like, if it's art about wrestling, yes, because it's a museum, that's the point. If it's thinking about like performance documentation, etc., there are different levels of wrestling presentation. There are some that I believe are that are essentially, they use wrestling as a pastiche, but I don't necessarily consider to be professional wrestling, like chokehold, for example. There are some things that fall within the middle, like Lucha Vavoom in LA, for example, which uses real, you know, super talented wrestlers, but the wrestling is kind of almost background to like stand-up comedy and burlesque and is shown on a stage. And then Tsukiban is, I think, the most interesting of those kind of hybrid products, because they have super talented, you know, Japanese women's pro wrestlers. They have an all Japanese crew. But they're also integrating elements of art, fashion, popular music, etc. And every time they run a show, whether it's at a comic convention in LA or at Art Basel Miami Beach last week, like the fans eat it up, you know? And they're not wrestling fans. I mean, there are, I think, a portion of the audience that are wrestling fans, but really it's a lot of folks in the world of fashion, art, and other creative fields, as well as, you know, people in the LGBTQ community, people who are in the anime community, things like that. So it has a real party feel. And, you know, it's like sometimes like non-hardcore fans are the best fans because they react the most and the less cynically. And they're not trying to get, like, they don't go to a performance to try to get themselves over or like start chants and make, you know, get attention to themselves. It's like, you wouldn't do that at a Broadway show, you know? So I think it's been very effective. I know the guys who run it, and Olympia Latan, who's the creative director, who's done incredible like visuals in terms of the costuming. I think it's an interesting thing, you know? Like a couple of years ago when they started, you know, it was like, yeah, it was, I feel like their intention was to try to get a media rights deal. And they're running very kind of like slow and steadily, but amping up their production, bringing in animators for like interstitials that kind of like have more of the storyline built out. But, you know, listen, a few years ago when people started telling me, when I saw that Netflix deal, that WWE signed, I was like, yeah, like there's no way that WWE is not going to try to like figure out some kind of proxy to block AEW from getting all these international deals and TV deals. And that's essentially what they did with TNA. That's exactly what they did with TNA. You know, they use them as a proxy, as like a WWE light to go in and block TV deals for their competition, because they'll do whatever they want kind of at this point, which is cool, you know, like, exposes those wrestlers and talent to a much wider universe. You know, I'd be more interested to see things like Tsukiban on like Crunchyroll, or things like back in the day, Lucha Underground obviously is a good example of that. That was like really good wrestling with very like out there, you know, kind of cinematic interlude. There was Wrestling Society X on MTV back in the day as well. So there's been a lot of these kind of like concept wrestling shows or products over the years that had varying degrees of success and public buy-in. I mean, I just went to Kaiju Big Battle on Sunday with my kid. And, you know, as somebody who like really is like a nerd about wrestling, people playing dress up and like doing like very basic wrestling moves where it's about the characters, I think that has like an appeal as like a one-time thing, but it's not what I consider necessarily the art form of professional wrestling. It's something else. It's like, Tsukiban, I think is somewhere in the middle, you know, they're good wrestlers, but it's not necessarily about the wrestling, in terms of the presentation. Like it's not the only thing that matters.
Yeah, no, and if the team there, the owners there, ever want to cross over into talking with the pro wrestling community or side of the house, we stand at the ready. So that offer is out there. Let me turn it over to John.
Where can everybody find and follow you? And then obviously Orange Crush and the Superpower Slam?
Sure. So I'm very prolific on Twitter at Orange Crush Art, and then also at Jersey CW on Twitter as well for Jersey Championship Wrestling, and then on Instagram at Jersey Championship Wrestling spelled out as well. And we have a number of major shows coming up. I have a show on Sunday called Round Ball Rock at the Mecca in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, which is a really stacked show. We have an I Quit match with Charles Mason and Billy Starks. We have a Loser Leaves Town match with Hoodfoot, Brian Keith, and Josh Bishop versus Joey Janela, Marcus Mathers, and Nick Camaroto. Loser Leaves Town's for 90 days, just to be clear. As well as a number of other kind of major superstars from around the country participating and coming, you know, to the New York, New Jersey area. So we have that show coming up, Superpower Slam. We have on February 1st, Melrose Ballroom, and that will actually very elegantly slide into Jersey J-Cup weekend in Jersey City. So that same week on Friday and Saturday at the White Eagle Hall, we're gonna have the Jersey J-Cup. And I don't know if Brett's announced it yet, but by the time this show airs, I can give you guys a scoop. We have confirmed Tiger Mask will be coming in wrestling at the Jersey J-Cup this year.
Wow.
Tiger Mask 4. Not the original. He's 68 years old.
Yeah, we're not Sayama. Yeah, he's a little old,
yeah. Yeah, but he still wrestles too sometimes. But no, Tiger Mask 4 is kind of winding down and has alluded to the fact that 2026 might be his final year. So I felt compelled to bring him in.
Nice. Love that. Adam, thank you so much for all the time tonight. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you guys. And let's do this again soon.
Thanks so much. Awesome. Looking forward.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye.
Have a good night, Ed. All right, Lavi, let's wrap this bad boy up. But before we do that, let's talk about TNA for a second, if we could. Lavi, what is going on with the news with TNA? You love talking TNA wrestling.
And the TNA faithful love me talking about it, right? They want to string me up or something like that, like a chicken. Of course, last week, as we were hanging up the call with Brett Lauderdale, ending the Zoom, I got a link where we couldn't hear the music, but there was a strong hint from AMC that TNA was coming and it came. So we don't necessarily have to read the press release, but we could reflect on it a little bit and see where things are coming. So very light poll. What are the first ratings predictions? And sometimes, depending on the categories that you put it, kind of influences things too. So just because some AEW programming has been quite low in the ratings, I was very conservative in the ratings categories. Now, probably for a successful launch or first week on AMC, they probably have to do much better than this. But of the choices that I had, and again, it was a lightly responded to poll, about 25% of people had between 50 and 75,000 viewers. Almost no one said 75 to 100K. 100 to 125K was a little bit less than 18%, and most people fell in the higher range of just over 50%, saying 125 to 150,000. Maybe if I put higher numbers, people would have said that, but nobody commented on anything else. But just to give an idea in terms of distribution, AMC is in about 60 million U.S. households. They have 10.4 million paid streaming subscribers. They average 200,000 in prime time. So that's an important number to remember. I was just joking because they have their street team, and obviously Adam even referred to it back 25 years ago of how it helped him get a break. So the ECW street team. So I remember in college, like, it seemed like an exciting thing to try if the opportunity was there. Really, now that they have the AMC cheddar, it's time to pay up. Actually, I believe, and we didn't have a chance to talk with Adam about that, Jersey Championship was one of the only companies that I've seen offer money for that. So kudos to Adam and his team. What else? So WWE was not involved in the AMC negotiations, per Carlos Silva, talking to John Alba at Sports Illustrated. No, we did all the negotiations ourselves, with me leading the charge on the TNA side, and then Creative Artist Agency leading the charge as our representative and our partner on the deal. Look, WWE and NXT are very important partners to us, so we keep them in the loop. They know what was coming. They knew about the deal before you knew about the deal. But no, they've got their own deals. They're very busy with their deals, so they let us go and cut a deal and get a major network. I think they're happy for us, and we were happy with the way it went. Then in regards to the AMC deal talked about on Busted Open Radio, it was a team effort. There were ups and downs. Any deal that you do, there's ups and downs. There's moments where you go, oh, my goodness, this is slipping through our fingers. But I think AMC was really excited. They're getting into the live sports entertainment business. They've always built great characters. We know that. And now I think together we're going to give them something every Thursday night, 52 weeks a year. It's going to change everything. It's going to change the way the fans get the product, see the product. I know it's going to bring that energy to the talent in the ring. Now we're going to feel that energy from the audience, from AMC as well. Now the mysterious acts causing some issues there. Sources, TNA is headed to AMC. The multi-year U.S. rights deal is finalized and expected to land around $30 million. Sources also indicate WWE intends to end its NXT-TNA partnership. Their agreement includes a 60-day termination clause, and the AMC deal activates it. So that's causing a PR headache for TNA, who responded. Sources in WWE and TNA were adamant that the existing partnership between the two sides, which was announced a multi-year deal, will continue on. WWE sources also confirmed that they were made aware of TNA's deal with AMC well in advance of today's announcement, and pointed out that TNA was referenced in that NXT was referenced in today's press release with AMC and TNA. Mike Johnson also put out a rumor killer, but I think, you know, it still is a possibility because it's not dead today. It doesn't mean that it won't happen. Trying to, like, make sense of the relationship with TNA, Adam rightly referencing it sort of like it's a check against AEW from what we understand. John, as the news was breaking, what were your thoughts on all the possibilities that this AMC deal brings to TNA, its stability, and its growth?
Was pretty shocked by it just because AMC never had wrestling before. So I wasn't really sure if that was going to be true or really that was the direction. But it seems like that's the direction of the network now. It's kind of going into, you know, working away from the Mad Men and the Breaking Bad and the Walking Dead and the original programming. They're kind of seem like, because of the streaming and because of, you know, all the other powerhouses out there, they're kind of headed in a different direction. So pretty cool, pretty good move. I like it. $30 million is pretty sweet. So obviously multi-year deal. So good job by TNA. Although initially pretty surprised by it because we kept hearing it was going to happen over and over and over and never happened. So then all of a sudden surprised us and it happened.
So now we're, I mean, Jericho, I think it's just an interesting, like, potential free agent soon out there, and depending on his deals that are on the table, I think coming to TNA even for a year and then potentially doing like a WWE retirement thing would make a lot of sense. I don't know, like, you know, with WWE, if they're really focused on the retirement thing, like, I don't think you could follow like John Cena with with anyone, but with Chris Jericho, it just doesn't seem the same, like, especially if you're gonna try it with more than one match. So maybe like kind of I mean, he's been away, but like he could get some money out of TNA. It would make like a huge splash for them, and then you could sort of like leverage that into WWE. He's old as a kind of like as an athlete, as a wrestler, but he's still, you know, a young person generally, as I guess, as I'm in my middle ages now. I mean, in terms of that perspective, so he has to think like sort of strategically, which he does. Just a little thing that the Andersons passed through TNA at Final Resolution, which apparently led to their end with MLW. So we'll see what comes with that. And as we're recording this, there's word on Masha Slamovich that I guess they're letting things die down. She was removed from their website, but that they may bring her back yet. I mean, they do have a history of people with domestic violence accusations returning to the company. And they do need every asset that they can get. Looking reflectively and then into the future in terms of their live events, El Paso on December 5th, according to WrestleTix, did 2,567. On December 6th, 1,692 tickets. Tickets aren't yet on sale for Dallas for the Curtis Colwell Center Thursday Night Impact, the live show, followed by Genesis, and then they'll be in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Tingley Coliseum. The Tingley Coliseum, just to look at that a little bit, this is quite a historic venue for wrestling. They have a maximum capacity of 11,571. So TNA, you could break the record again, but I don't think that's what they're going for here. I think that was really an important PR thing for them, and that's not something that they really need to focus on right now, with the attendance potentially varying, especially with a television setup. But just looking back, even over the last 35 to 40 years of wrestling, WWE had passed through there every few years. It could vary between 3,000 and 9,000, even in 2001, obviously, when things were very hot. They did almost 11,000 people in the building. WCW had taped there, both companies had sort of switched off running there from the late 80s to early 90s as well. So a lot going on with TNA. There's nothing like a debut of a promotion on a new broadcast. It kind of feels like the world is full of endless possibilities. I am conservative again to bring it back. I think it will be a low number. What's your prediction, John?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of thought lower number, just because it's a new network, doesn't really have wrestling for it. I just assume probably lower number.
Yeah, remember MLW's ill-fated one-time debut in primetime on Vice? That ended up doing 40,000?
Right.
So yep. This is higher profile, obviously, on Access TV. That was reporting a couple years ago as even 100,000. I'm going to go under 100, maybe 90,000.
Wow, okay. All right. You could see somewhere around that. That's not a bad guess.
If this is a short, John, that will get a lot of engagement.
Yes. Hey, we'll see what it ends up being, but that'll be a number we will talk about, and we will definitely digest. As far as here and there, though, Bobby, there's a lot of interesting here and there going on, not only NWA, but CMLL. There's like a lot of cool things going on.
Yeah, this is the most extensive here and there, meaning that I just had one news piece each for a number of different promotions or interesting stories. So I'm just going to run through them quickly because each is intriguing in its own way. So NWA, we don't often hear a lot coming back from their territories necessarily. Most of it runs through the main shows. And if not, the Chicago shows, which is, of course, Billy Corgan's home promotion in addition to owning it all. So Richard Holiday captured the NWA Midwest heavyweight title and looking very classic with the belt and so on. So just something interesting to keep an eye on. CMLL, 1 million tickets in 2025. I don't know if this was like just Arena Mexico or like a million just in general, like rolling everything up. No matter what, really, really impressive number. And I'd imagine, given WWE's low limited shows that they run, maybe this is the most in the world. Haven't run those numbers at the moment. MLW Battle Riot 8, January 29th in Orlando. Tickets distributed 204, a current setup of 849. The Sukaban, maybe we'll come back to that next week. I think we covered most of those elements as well. Triller, this is never a good thing. Their lawyers have not been paid, and they're kind of done with them. So Fight Opinion had this piece. Attorneys on behalf of Triller in the New York lawsuit, defendants versus Yorkville Advisors, have filed papers claiming that Triller hasn't communicated with counsel in 2 months, allegedly owes $28,000 plus in fees, which is interesting because when I engaged a lawyer for media for a much smaller thing, a positive thing in terms of contracts signing a number of years ago, you always like put money in the till early, and then the lawyers would use it up and say like, okay, give us more. You don't usually get behind. So that's interesting. But obviously with bigger situations, it's a different deal. West Coast Pro kind of doing their own thing. And I guess this sums up like managing the challenges of independent wrestling and being innovative. They're forming relationships, but not under like an NWA brand, finding ones that are organic and like sort of, I guess, buzzworthy promotions that travel outside of their region. Over the last few weeks, Wrestle Coast has announced new working relationships, including New Texas Pro, WXW in Germany, St. Louis Anarchy. That's why today we're proud to recognize Action Wrestling and their champions as part of our growing initiative. You're going to be seeing more talent from Action along with St. Louis Anarchy and New Texas Pro at West Coast Pro events as we continue building this new initiative. So that's here, there, and almost everywhere.
Love that. And CMLL, a million tickets sold. Damn. Meltzer was saying how hot they were. That is hot. That is smoldering hot there. Good job of CMLL for sure.
It's such a cultural institution that, you know, feel when they go to Mexico City, it's just something that they do. And it's great for them to be so baked in with tourism and just the local community that you'll, as long as you're doing what you need to do, you'll have that baseline and then you have the fans that are local and so on to build from.
Good call. So let's wrap this bad boy up and head towards the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. How about you, Lovey?
Follow me on X at Lovey Mark, LaveyMarg. Check out my long-form articles on LionCubJobSearch.com and join our LinkedIn group, The Business of the Business.
All right, everybody, head out and get over to the Superpower Slam coming up February 1st, JCW and Orange Crush. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Business of the Business. See you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. Join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. With our exclusive offer, go to manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z, for 20% off and free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no P. pews. If you really want to make 2023 the year to remember, make sure to try out Manscaped's Wet Goods as well. This includes the Ultra Premium Body Wash 2-in-1 Shampoo and Body Deodorant. These products are absolute perfect for follow-up after your New Year's gym sessions. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BIZ at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Well, winners are getting paid. Now that backlash is in the books, now it's time to regroup before that storm hits. Just like the WWE, the real setup is already in motion. From every promo, every face-off, every backstage stare-down on Raw and SmackDown, it is all building towards one thing, Money in the Bank. If you know anything about Money in the Bank, you know chaos is coming, surprise cash-ins, career-defining moments, wild upsets. It's one of the most unpredictable cards of the year. And if you're ready, it could be one of the most profitable, too. Even if you've never bet on WWE before, this is your window. Keep one eye on WWE and keep the other on MyBookie. When the lines go live, they won't sit still for long. Lock in right now. Go to MyBookie. Use the promo code CONTROL. CONTROL and boost your bankroll. Deposit $50, get an extra $25. Go bigger with $100, and MyBookie throws in $50. That's right. Use the promo code CONTROL, boost that bankroll, deposit $50, get an extra $25, or go bigger, deposit $100, and MyBookie will throw in an extra $50. Bet smart, stay ready, and cash in when it counts, only at MyBookie.